Chapter 10. Ego, said Simon. Wonder whether this be a reality or a dream. I am sober, I know, for who will give me credit for the means to be drunk? And as for sleeping, I'm too hungry for that. I wish I could see a capon and a bottle of white wine. Monsieur Simon, cried a voice on the landing place. Qu'est ici, quoth Gamboge, hastening to open the door. He did so, and lo, there was a restaurateur's boy at the door, supporting a tray, a tin-covered dish, and plates on the same, and, by its side, a tall amber-colored flask of Sauternes. I am the new boy, sir, exclaimed this youth, on entering, but I believe this is the right door, and you asked for these things. Simon grinned, and said, certainly, I did ask for these things. But such was the effect which his interview with the demon had had on his innocent mind, that he took them, although he knew that they were for old Simon, the Jew dandy, who was mad after an opera girl, and lived on the floor beneath. Go, my boy, he said. It is good. Call in a couple of hours, and remove the plates and glasses. The little waiter trotted downstairs, and Simon sat greedily down to discuss the capon and the white wine. He bolted the legs, he devoured the wings, he cut every morsel of flesh from the breast, seasoning his repast with pleasant draughts of wine, and caring nothing for the inevitable bill, which was to follow all. Ye gods! Said he, as he scraped away at the backbone, what a dinner! What wine! And how gaily served up too! There were silver forks and spoons, and the remnants of the fowl were upon the silver dish. Hi, the money for this dish and these spoons, cried Simon, would keep me and Mrs. G for a month. I wish, and here Simon whistled, and turned round to see that nobody was peeping, wish the plate were mine. Oh, the horrid progress of the devil! Here they are, thought Simon to himself. Why should not I take them? And take them he did. Detection, said he, is not so bad as starvation, and I would as soon live at the galleys as live with Madame Gamboge. So Gamboge shoveled dish and spoons into the flap of his surtout, and ran downstairs, as if the devil were behind him, as, indeed, he was. He immediately made for the house of his old friend the pawnbroker, that establishment which is called in France the Mont de Piete. I am obliged to come to you again, my old friend, said Simon, with some family plate, of which I beseech you to take care. The pawnbroker smiled as he examined the goods. Can give you nothing upon them, said he. What? Cried Simon. Not even the worth of the silver? No, I could buy them at that price at the Café Morisset, apostrophe Rue de la Verrerie, where, I suppose, you got them a little cheaper. And, so saying, he showed to the guilt-stricken Gamboge how the name of that coffee house was inscribed upon every one of the articles which he had wished to pawn. The effects of conscience are dreadful indeed. Oh, how fearful is retribution, how deep is despair, how bitter is remorse for crime, when crime is found out. Otherwise, conscience takes matters much more easily. Gamboge cursed his fate, and swore henceforth to be virtuous. But, harkee, my friend, continued the honest broker, there is no reason why, because I cannot lend upon these things, I should not buy them. They will do to melt, if for no other purpose. Will you have half the money? Speak, or I peach. Simon's resolves about virtue were dissipated instantaneously. Give me half, he said, and let me go. What scoundrels are these pawnbrokers, ejaculated he, as he passed out of the accursed shop, seeking every wicked pretext to rob the poor man of his hard-won gain. When he had marched forwards for a street or two, Gamboge counted the money which he had received, and found that he was in possession of no less than 100 francs. It was night, as he reckoned out his equivocal gains, and he counted them at the light of a lamp. He looked up at the lamp, in doubt as to the course he should next pursue. Upon it was inscribed the simple number, 152. Gambling house, thought Gamboge. Wish I had half the money that is now on the table, upstairs. He mounted, as many a rogue has done before him, and found half a hundred persons busy at a table of rouge et noir. Gamboge's five Napoleons looked insignificant by the side of the heaps which were around him, but the effects of the wine, of the theft, and of the detection by the pawnbroker, were upon him, and he threw down his capital stoutly upon the 00. It is a dangerous spot, that 00 or 00, but to Simon it was more lucky than to the rest of the world. The ball went spinning round in T.S. predestined circle rolled, as Shelley has it, after Guy and plumped down at last in the 00. 135 gold Napoleons, Louis they were then, were counted out to the delighted painter. H. Diabolus! Cried he, now it is that I begin to believe in thee. Don't talk about merit, he cried, talk about fortune. Tell me not about heroes for the future, tell me of zeros. And down went 20 Napoleons more upon the zero. The devil was certainly in the ball. Round it whirled, and dropped into zero as naturally as a duck pops its head into a pond. Our friend received £500 for his stake, and the croupiers and lookers-on began to stare at him. There were £12,000 on the table. Suffice it to say, that Simon won half, and retired from the Palace Royal with a thick bundle of banknotes crammed into his dirty three-cornered hat. He had been but half an hour in the place, and he had won the revenues of a prince for half a year. Gamboge, as soon as he felt that he was a capitalist, and that he had a stake in the country, discovered that he was an altered man. He repented of his foul deed, and his base purloining of the restaurateur's plate. Honesty! He cried, how unworthy is an action like this of a man who has a property like mine! So he went back to the pawnbroker with the gloomiest face imaginable. My friend, said he, I have sinned against all that I hold most sacred. I have forgotten my family and my religion. Here is thy money. In the name of heaven, restore me the plate which I have wrongfully sold thee. But the pawnbroker grinned, and said, Nay, Mr. Gamboge, I will sell that plate for 1,000 francs to you, or I never will sell it at all. Well, cried Gamboge, thou art an inexorable ruffian, Troy's bowels, but I will give thee all I am worth. And here he produced a billet of 500 francs. Ugh, said he, this money is all I own. It is the payment of 2 years' lodging. To raise it, I have toiled for many months, and, failing, I have been a criminal. Oh heaven! I stole that plate, that I might pay my debt, and keep my dear wife from wandering houseless. But I cannot bear this load of ignominy, I cannot suffer the thought of this crime. I will go to the person to whom I did wrong, I will starve, I will confess, but I will do right. The broker was alarmed. I've me thy note, he cried. Here is the plate. Give me an acquittal first, cried Simon, almost broken-hearted. Sign me a paper, and the money is yours. So Troy's bowels wrote according to Gamboge's dictation. Received, for 13 ounces of plate, £20. Monster of iniquity, cried the painter, fiend of wickedness. Thou art caught in thine own snares. Hast thou not sold me £5 worth of plate for 20? Have I it not in my pocket? Art thou not a convicted dealer in stolen goods? Yield, scoundrel, yield thy money, or I will bring thee to justice. The frightened pawnbroker bullied and battled for a while, but he gave up his money at last, and the dispute ended. Thus it will be seen that Diabolus had rather a hard bargain in the wily Gamboge. He had taken a victim prisoner, but he had assuredly caught a Tartar. Simon now returned home, and, to do him justice, paid the bill for his dinner, and restored the plate. And now I may add, and the reader should ponder upon this, as a profound picture of human life, that Gamboge, since he had grown rich, grew likewise abundantly moral. He was a most exemplary father. He fed the poor, and was loved by them. He scorned a base action. and I have no doubt that Mr. Thurtell, or the late lamented Mr. Greenacre, in similar circumstances, would have acted like the worthy Simon Gambouch. There was but one blot upon his character: he hated Mrs. Gam. Worse than ever. As he grew more benevolent, she grew more virulent. When he went to plays, she went to Bible societies, and vice versa. In fact, she led him such a life as Xanthippe led Socrates, or as a dog leads a cat in the same kitchen. With all his fortune for, as may be supposed, Simon prospered in all worldly things, he was the most miserable dog in the whole city of Paris. Only in the point of drinking did he and Mrs. Simon agree, and for many years, and during a considerable number of hours in each day, he thus dissipated, partially, his domestic chagrin. O philosophy! We may talk of thee. But, except at the bottom of the wine cup, where thou liest like truth in a well, where shall we find thee? He lived so long, and in his worldly matters prospered so much, there was so little sign of devilment in the accomplishment of his wishes, and the increase of his prosperity, that Simon, at the end of 6 years, began to doubt whether he had made any such bargain at all as that which we have described at the commencement of this history. He had grown, as we said, very pious and moral. He went regularly to Mass, and had a confessor into the bargain. He resolved, therefore, to consult that reverend gentleman, and to lay before him the whole matter. I am inclined to think, holy sir, said Gambouch, after he had concluded his history, and shown how, in some miraculous way, all his desires were accomplished, that, after all, this demon was no other than the creation of my own brain, heated by the effects of that bottle of wine, the cause of my crime and my prosperity. The confessor agreed with him, and they walked out of church comfortably together, and entered afterwards a café, where they sat down to refresh themselves after the fatigues of their devotion. A respectable old gentleman, with a number of orders at his buttonhole, presently entered the room, and sauntered up to the marble table, before which reposed Simon and his clerical friend. "Excuse me, gentlemen," he said, as he took a place opposite them, and began reading the papers of the day. "Bah!" said he, at last, "on Hill's Grand Cesternox Anglis? Look, sir," he said, handing over an immense sheet of the Times to Mr. Gambouch, "was ever anything so monstrous?" Gambouch smiled politely, and examined the proffered page. "T is enormous," he said, "but I do not read English." "Nay," said the man with the orders, "look closer at it, Signor Gambouch. It is astonishing how easy the language is." Wondering, Simon took a sheet of paper. He turned pale as he looked at it, and began to curse the ices and the waiter. "Om, M. Lab," he said, "the heat and glare of this place are intolerable." The stranger rose with them. "You placer de vous revoir, monsieur monsieur," said he. "I do not mind speaking before the abbe here, who will be my very good friend one of these days. But I thought it necessary to refresh your memory concerning our little business transaction 6 years since, and could not exactly talk of it at church, as you may fancy." Simon Gambouch had seen, in the double-sheeted Times, the paper signed by himself, which the little devil had pulled out of his fob. There was no doubt on the subject, and Simon, who had but a year to live, grew more pious, and more careful than ever. He had consultations with all the doctors of the Sorbonne, and all the lawyers of the palace. But his magnificence grew as wearisome to him as his poverty had been before, and not one of the doctors whom he consulted could give him a pennyworth of consolation. Then he grew outrageous in his demands upon the devil, and put him to all sorts of absurd and ridiculous tasks, but they were all punctually performed, until Simon could invent no new ones, and the devil sat all day with his hands in his pockets doing nothing. One day, Simon's confessor came bounding into the room, with the greatest glee. "Why, friend," said he, "I have it. Eureka! I have found it. Send the Pope 100,000 crowns. Build a new Jesuit college at Rome. Give 100 gold candlesticks to St. Peter's. And tell His Holiness you will double all, if he will give you absolution. Gambouch caught at the notion, and hurried off a courier to Rome Venterater. His Holiness agreed to the request of the petition, and sent him an absolution, written out with his own fist, and all in due form. Now, said he, foul fiend, I defy you. Arise, Diabolus. Your contract is not worth a jot. The Pope has absolved me, and I am safe on the road to salvation. In a fervor of gratitude he clasped the hand of his confessor, and embraced him. Tears of joy ran down the cheeks of these good men. They heard an inordinate roar of laughter, and there was Diabolus sitting opposite to them, holding his sides, and lashing his tail about, as if he would have gone mad with glee. Why, said he, what nonsense is this? Do you suppose I care about that? And he tossed the Pope's missive into a corner. Dutlab knows, he said, bowing and grinning, that though the Pope's paper may pass current here, it is not worth 2 pence in our country. What do I care about the Pope's absolution? You might just as well be absolved by your under-butler. Egad, said the Abbe, the rogue is right, I quite forgot the fact, which he points out clearly enough. No, no, Gambouch, continued Diabolus, with horrid familiarity. Go thy ways, old fellow, that cock won't fight. And he retired up the chimney, chuckling at his wit and his triumph. Gambouch heard his tail scuttling all the way up, as if he had been a sweeper by profession. Simon was left in that condition of grief in which, according to the newspapers, cities and nations are found, when a murder is committed, or a lord ill of the gout a situation, we say, more easy to imagine than to describe. To add to his woes, Mrs. Gambouch, who was now first made acquainted with his compact, and its probable consequences, raised such a storm about his ears, as made him wish, almost that his 7 years were expired. She screamed, she scolded, she swore, she wept, she went into such fits of hysterics, that poor Gambouch, who had completely knocked under to her, was worn out of his life. He was allowed no rest, night or day. He moped about his fine house, solitary and... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.